Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 24th, 2019. President Kiir criticizes the country's generals at an awards ceremony in Juba.
When I was going around to look at this parade, I saw that the health of these soldiers are completely very bad. And if their health is very bad, it means that you are not feeding them and not giving them their money.
And Sudanese diaspora in the United States stage a protest outside a hotel in Washington.
His name is Muhammad Atta. He is solely responsible for the murder of about 200 protesters in 2013. And he ordered the use of live ammunition. We are seeing the same atrocities happening right now. They are shooting peaceful protesters.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. More than 150 Sudanese protesters gathered last night in front of Wilyard Intercontinental Hotel in Washington, D.C., few blocks from the White House. It was the site of a Sudan embassy dinner commemorating the country's 63rd independence anniversary. The charge d'affaires at the Sudanese embassy in Washington, Muhammad Atta, was inside the hotel as protesters chant their slogans.
I'm in front of the Willard Intercontinental Hotel. It's a luxury hotel in Washington located just blocks from the White House. And I'm met here by more than 75 Sudanese diaspora members who have come here to protest the presence of Sudanese Ambassador Muhammad Atta, who was inside having a state dinner. Adil Taha joins me.
We are here because the Sudanese embassy or the embassy of Khartoum, what they are doing, they are celebrating what is so-called the National Day. And that, to us, is not a celebrated moment. They came here to spend the money of the Sudanese people in the luxurious hotel in Washington, D.C., to entertain whatever it is they are entertaining while his regime killing the peaceful demonstrator back home.
What is your message to the U.S. government?
Our message to our President Trump and Congress and everybody in the United States government, they should kick him out of here as soon as possible because the United States is a beacon country of the human rights, democracy, and all the good values. He has no value. He's a criminal. He's not a diplomat, and he should be get out. And we support Senator Leahy because he wrote to President Trump asking him to chase him out of here, and he should leave the United States right away.
Mr. Taha, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Taha is referring to a letter co-written by Senator Bob Menendez, a Democrat from New Jersey, and Senator Patrick Leahy, a Democrat from Vermont. In that letter, the senators call for the expulsion and potential sanctioning of the charge d'affaires of the Sudanese embassy in Washington, Mr. Muhammad Atta, citing a, quote, well-documented pattern of gross human rights violations attributed to the NISS during Mr. Atta's tenure, including the killing of as many as 185 protesters in Khartoum in 2013, end quote. The number of protesters has grown just in the last 10 or so minutes. There's now easily about 100 people on site.
Represent the Sudanese people, but the murderous regime, the dictatorship of Omar al-Bashir. His name is Muhammad Atta. He is solely responsible for the murder of about 200 protesters in 2013. He was head of the security forces, and he ordered the use of live ammunition. We are seeing the same atrocities happening right now. They are shooting peaceful protesters. We have thousands of detainees. We have 47 dead within the last 3 weeks. We need action from the United States government, not just denouncing. That's not enough. We need stronger action.
That was Maayed Baba, one of the lead protesters tonight. I'm joined by Hanim Majjud. Hanim, could you just describe the scene for us tonight?
The ambassador of Sudan
who invite all the important people in the United, in Washington, D.C. area. And he's having dinner in a very nice hotel right here. And all those people you see, they are here to say the word about Muhammad Atta. He's a criminal. He's wanted. Who's the one who killed our people in Darfur, Nuba Mountain.
But Mr. Atta has denied all allegations.
Of course he will deny it. If the president in Sudan, he denied it. Of course, Muhammad Atta and all, we call it Kaizan. All Kaizan will deny this. They were never going to say that. But trust me, we will take them to court.
It's about 8:30 at night right now, and the protesters have grown to at least 200. The protesters have been instructed to stay on the sidewalk, but as of now, more than half of them are on the streets. And they're directing their voices to guests who are coming out of the hotel, who presumably were at the dinner where the ambassador of Sudan was. They're saying, shame on you, to a young man dressed in army uniform, presumably a diplomat, not sure from what country, but they're saying, shame on you for having dinner with Mr. Atta. It's about 8:50 at night, and I'm getting reports from several protesters here that Mr. Atta has left. I hear that he left through the garage, so he did not leave through the front of the Willard Intercontinental Hotel where the protesters are. But I'm also hearing that the protesters are planning more protests tomorrow at the Sudan Embassy, so it does not look like they have any indication of slowing down anytime soon. This is Ayen Dengbuer reporting in Washington.
Yeah, Ayen did that report last night at a hotel here in Washington. We now turn to Zimbabwe, where in the light of the country's currency crisis, raising inflation and high cost of living, the civil service has been calling for salary increase. The government has made an offer, but civil servants are not happy with it, and Friday could bring new labor action. Reporter Kuzai Zenivashi has more from Harare.
David Tsatsunga is the secretary of the Civil Service Apex Council, a collective body for civil servants. He says the unions on Wednesday gave government a clear warning.
As Apex Council, having met the government severally with no tangible results, we are advising government today that the notice that we served on government on 8 January 2019 expires in the next 48 hours.
Government had offered civil servants what amounts to a raise of 22.7%, but the Apex Council has turned it down as too little.
On the expiry of the notice period on Friday, the Apex Council will not be liable for whatever happens thereafter. That's our position that has been taken by all the civil service unions.
Teachers already are on strike, with many staying off the job for part of each week. There are reports of activists from the ruling ZANU-PF party attacking striking teachers. While the Apex leadership is not saying civil service workers definitely will go on strike, they suggested that having served government with notice signaling their intention to strike, if they did do so, it would be within the law. Any labor action would come after nearly 2 weeks of rising tensions following the government's move of doubling fuel prices. Security forces and government supporters have cracked down on protesters and hundreds have been arrested. The government has blamed outside forces of trying to use the country's economic wars as an excuse to overthrow it. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
After a contentious, chaotic election, the Democratic Republic of Congo inaugurated a new president today. Felix Tshisekedi's inauguration, while disputed and controversial, is the first peaceful power transfer that independent Congo has ever seen. But is it really a new start? Analysts say no. VOA's Anita Paul reports from Johannesburg.
All eyes were on Felix Tshisekedi as he was sworn in as new president of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He may have felt the pressure, taking an unscheduled break to leave the stage because he felt, as he said, exhausted by the long election campaign and the emotion of the occasion. But his swearing-in on Thursday represents the first peaceful transition of power in six decades, a historic occasion for a nation long beset by conflict, instability, and brutal politics. On Wednesday, outgoing President Joseph Kabila, who has held power for 18 years, urged the nation to accept their new leader. Tshisekedi's election comes with great controversy. He was declared the winner over objections by opposition candidate Martin Fayulu, who says he actually won the December poll. The influential Catholic Church backed that claim. Fayulu's supporters protested earlier this week after his bid for a recount was rejected by the nation's highest court. Now, as Tshisekedi takes the helm, his critics say they want to see the new president step up. Pro-democracy activist Sylvain Saluseke watched the proceedings from the sidelines in Johannesburg, as his activism has put him in self-imposed exile for nearly 4 years. He said that while he's not entirely satisfied with how the poll played out, he has high hopes for Tshisekedi.
I think he has an opportunity to express himself, at least to show. He has shown in the past that he tends to be consensual or listen to his buzz, as he call it. If that is how he's going to run the country, I think he will have to be able to not only listen to as many people as possible, because people will try and control him, but I think he needs to be able to show us that he's a president who can take decisions and stand by them.
But Kabila, who will continue in politics as president of the Senate, may not be far behind. He will be Tshisekedi's biggest challenge, says analyst Stephanie Walters of the Institute for Security Studies.
He doesn't have to cede a whole lot of power. He will become a senator, so he will be influential in the Senate. He will still be the president of the largest coalition, political coalition in the country, with a parliamentary majority and a grip on the provincial assemblies, the 26 provincial assemblies, and on those governors.
Saluseke agrees.
We know that the elephant in the room is Kabila. Kabila hasn't left. And as long as Kabila is still in the country and in the deal, he will still be controlling everything. And that's how we're optimistic about the country. But about his Felix Tshisekedi's presidency, he has work to do.
Today, Kabila took a back seat. And with a new president in office, at least some Congolese were in the mood to celebrate. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, President Salva Kiir threatens to fire South Sudanese military officers. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you know any first aid techniques?
Come to think of this question, I thought I do, but seriously, I think I may not be able to do too well if there is any situation present. Maybe it's something I need to go in and learn how to do. It could help somebody tomorrow.
During our school days, the Red Cross Society, the clubs that we join, they taught us a lot. When a child runs high temperature, you sponge the child with water from the leg to the head. Then you just rush the person to the hospital for best treatment.
In case if you have drowned maybe from water, the first aid technique that is available to be given is a kiss of life to a person that has drowned into water.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir has threatened to fire some top military general over alleged cases of corruption. He accused unnamed generals of embezzling money and stealing food meant to feed soldiers. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Donning his usual Stetson cowboy hat and black shoe, President Kiir inspected a military guard of honor before addressing soldiers during a ceremony at military headquarters in Bilfarm, outside Juba, where he awarded medals of bravery to six former long-serving generals. Speaking in Arabic, Mr. Kiir said, He was disappointed to see how weak and physically unfit the soldiers looked compared to their generals, whom he admonished during the ceremony.
When I was going around to look at this parade, I saw that the health of these soldiers are completely very bad. And if their health is very bad, it means that you are not feeding them and not giving them their money. And yet, I'm always fighting with my cabinet ministers and the Speaker of Parliament, asking them to increase the budget for the military. But what I see in their health here does not please me.
Mr. Kir says he is well aware that some military officers have diverted money meant for soldiers' salaries and have sold the food meant for the soldiers in local markets, forcing South Sudan's troops to go hungry.
After this, that I have signed the peace agreement and I'm in the implementation process.
Now that I have signed a peace agreement with the armed opposition and I am in the process of implementing it, I am getting back to you, commanders in the army. First, you have forced soldiers to desert because you left them hungry and they have gone, and you are still holding their files and receiving their salaries, which you are taking to your homes. This is not right, and it must stop from today.
Kir says he is preparing to reform the army as the revitalized peace agreement is beginning to be implemented, but did not elaborate on the measures he is undertaking to improve the institution.
You cannot remain in the army just because you are strong.
You cannot remain in the army just because you are strong, taking people's money and food. You will never remain in this army. Though I am told that when you leave the army, there is nowhere you can go. Should I just keep you in the army, even when you don't go to the front line to fight, and just making sure that you cannot suffer outside there? No, I will lay you all off and bring in new people.
This is not the first time Mr. Kir accused military officers of committing crimes. Last year, he accused unnamed military and police officers of carrying out night robberies and killing civilians in Juba. Kir awarded medals to Vice President James Wani Iga, Defense Minister Kwol Manyang Juk, and former Jonggole Estate Governor John Kwong Nyon, among others. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Dutch ambassador to South Sudan says while South Sudan's former warring parties have made some progress in implementing the revitalized peace deal, she worries about the delay to form the Independent Boundaries Committee, which is expected to determine the number of states in the country. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
In an exclusive interview with South Sudan in Focus, Ambassador Janet Albada says the Netherlands and much of the rest of the international community worries that the former warring parties do not have a fallback plan if the revised peace deal is not implemented.
There is no plan B right now, and that's real clear messages that we see by parties to the agreement. We also, of course, see that not all parties have signed the agreement, so we ask for a political solution in that area. We would really like, you know, there to be a political solution so all parties can agree to the agreements and that they go forward.
Albada says when the parties allow free access to officials from the ceasefire monitoring body known as CITESAM and the UN mission in South Sudan, will the international community be convinced that the parties are effectively implementing the deal? She says restrictions on CITESAM and UNMISS staff makes the international community wonder whether the warring parties have the political will to fully implement the agreement.
Of course, political will also needs to be translated into actions. I think ongoing clashes in Yei and Ubek, for example, they are also a sign. And I think in order for us to really understand what's happening there, it's important that there's freedom of movement, like, for example, for organizations like CITESAM, but also UNMISS, to really explore what's happening and to understand it in order for us also to have a proper dialogue with parties on that.
South Sudan government officials and opposition representatives have been calling on international donors to fund implementation of the revitalized peace deal. Speaking to foreign envoys in Juba yesterday, South Sudan Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Deng Dao Deng warned of unspecified consequences should the parties fail to raise the funds required to implement the deal. But Albada says while the international community is willing to fund implementation of the agreement, it still wants to see transparency on how the Kiir administration is using the country's oil revenues to implement the agreement.
We don't really know, actually, what is the NPTC, what is their budget, what are their needs? We have not seen anything on that side. I also want to know, if the $1 million, for example, that the Tigunu promised to put into one of these accounts, whether that money has been dispersed. I mean, I need to know also a little bit more about the total picture of revenues, needs. I've not seen that.
Albada says while fighting has dissipated since the parties signed the deal in September and the transitional government of national unity is supposed to be formed after the pre-transitional government ends in May, the guns have yet to go completely silent in parts of Yei River State and Jubek State. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Germany has donated 4 million euros, which is equivalent to $4.5 million, to the UN World Food Programme to provide food and nutrition assistance to vulnerable South Sudanese. The German ambassador to South Sudan says his country will continue to support recovery and resilient building activities that will help South Sudan become a food secure nation in the long term. Winnie Cherino has the story for VOA from Juba.
Jan Hendrik, the German ambassador to South Sudan, says the money will especially help internally displaced persons, children under the age of 2, and pregnant and nursing women. The latest contribution brings the total German contributions to WFP activities in South Sudan over the past year to 27 million euros, or about $31 million. Hendrik says the conflict has forced Germany to focus more on humanitarian rather than development assistance.
Over the last years, unfortunately, the war has prevented the development of our development-orientated projects, but we still have many of them, you know, like water and sanitation in Yambio and Yei and Torit, also here in Juba, and many, many, many small places around the country. But our main focus has, due to the crisis situation in the country, become humanitarian assistance. So we have moved, unfortunately, a little bit away from development.
Hendrik says German wants South Sudanese people to eventually produce their own food so they can once again support themselves.
Together with WFP, we have moved from strictly food distribution more to livelihood building and resilience building. I think it is a very important movement that WFP, other organizations, and actually all the donors, not only Germany, want that we don't fall into this dependency trap. We want, wherever it's possible, we want to enable the people to take care of themselves.
Thompson Peary, the WFP spokesperson in South Sudan, says part of the money will be used to fund the United Nations Humanitarian Aid Service to keep providing flights for the humanitarian community. He says the humanitarian need in South Sudan has deepened and there is more need to help people building or restoring community assets, including roads, emergency school meals to keep children in school and treating malnourished children.
The number of people in need of food assistance in South Sudan at the moment right now is about 5.3 million. This number is expected to increase, particularly as we approach the lean hunger months from May round about to August. We will know exactly the number of people in need in 2019 once results from an integrated food first classification report are in early February.
Peary says WFP is conducting an assessment to determine which regions were most affected by the conflict and the kind of assistance people there require. In 2017, UN agencies declared a famine in some parts of the country, including Ler, Mayendit and Ayod counties in former Unity State. Peary says the money donated by the German government will help WFP transport more food in advance and deliver timely assistance to the people in need before the rainy season begins.
We are able to buy food and then pre-position it. By pre-positioning, this is food that we then already move into areas that will be affected, that will be impassable once the rainy season starts in May and June. This is one of the most effective ways for us to reduce the cost of delivering assistance in South Sudan. It helps us with efficiencies.
In September last year, German donated 11 million euros to the UN World Food Program in South Sudan to help build community resilience in food insecure areas. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. At least 150 Sudanese diaspora protested, with some chanting anti-Bashir slogans last night outside Washington, D.C.'s Willard Hotel, just a few blocks from the White House. There was a Sudan embassy dinner commemorating Sudan's independence underway. Sudan's chargé d'affaires in Washington, Muhammad Atta, was at the head of the table inside. One protester outside said Sudan's National Day is not a day to celebrate at all. He also said it's not right that Atta was dining at a luxury hotel and celebrating while a Bashir regime is killing peaceful protesters back home. He says the Trump administration should kick Atta out of Washington as soon as possible. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has threatened to fire some top military officers over charges of corruption. He accused unnamed generals of embezzling money and stealing food meant for soldiers today. Donning his usual Stetson cowboy hat and black suit, President Kiir inspected a military guard of honor before addressing soldiers during a ceremony at military headquarters just outside Juba, where he awarded medals of bravery to six generals. Kiir said he was disappointed that some of the soldiers looked weak compared to their generals present. Kiir said he knows that some military officers have diverted money meant for those soldiers' salaries and have sold the food meant for the soldiers in local markets, which has forced those troops to go hungry. He also threatened to fire them at the ceremony. And finally, Holland's ambassador to Juba says while South Sudan's former warring parties have made some progress in implementing the revitalized peace deal, she worries about the delay to form the Independent Boundaries Committee, which is expected to determine the number of states. Ambassador Janetta Alberta told this program that the Netherlands and much of the international community worries that the former warring parties do not have a fallback plan if the revised peace deal is not implemented. She said only when the parties allow free access to officials from the ceasefire monitoring body known as the SITSAM and the UNMISS in South Sudan will the international community be convinced that the parties are effectively implementing the deal. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with South Sudanese children singing about their future. We have been listening to some South Sudanese children singing about the conflict in their country. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.